Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 31st, 2017. Yes, the Halloween edition. Happy Halloween, everybody. Coming up after this brief break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw television show. Monday's Raw was in Baltimore, Maryland at Royal Farms Arena, and they went light on the Halloween campiness. They did have one trick or street fight match that I'd like to erase from my memory forever. They also, I say they went light, but they had Braun Strowman basically playing the monster role, coming back for revenge. It was like Braun Strowman knows what you did last summer for The Miz and company. He didn't get to destroy Miz, but he did destroy Curtis Axel with, I think I lost count, 6-7 different power slams, eventually put him through the broadcast table as well. So Braun Strowman is back for revenge, and there were plenty of returns on this show, including Stephanie McMahon, who went from, oh, hey, Stephanie, wonder what this is going to be, to, oh, yeah, Stephanie, she's just going to emasculate someone. She lived up to that expectation very quickly, and it just basically she just picked up right where she left off, so nothing really compelling there. But we saw Braun Strowman, Stephanie McMahon, Samoa Joe, Nia Jax, Bo Dallas, JoJo the ring announcer. Heck, I might even be forgetting some. We did not see Roman Reigns or Bray Wyatt on this week's show, but we'll work our way through it, starting with the beginning. Again, Baltimore, Maryland at Royal Farms Arena. They opened up with a recap of last week's angle with the Survivor Series announcement and the SmackDown invasion. Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Booker T were on commentary. Kurt Angle stood in the ring while the roster of Raw wrestlers was standing on the stage, and he was there to address what happened with the SmackDown Under Siege invasion. And he said that Shane McMahon took what he thought was a friendly competition too far. He apologized to the Raw crew. He said he allowed his friendship with Shane to blind him, and they paid the price for it. He said it was a slap in the face, and he put them in harm's way, and it won't ever happen again. And he was about to make another promise when he was interrupted by Stephanie McMahon's entrance music. This was not greeted by the sounds that you would expect for a returning McMahon family member. All right, well, maybe for Stephanie, but you'd think after this long break, I mean, she's been gone since, I believe, WrestleMania, you'd think there might be a little more of a reaction, some anticipation, but I think fans have come to expect what we ended up seeing. Just Stephanie is going to come out, emasculate Kurt Angle. She, you know, there's really, we haven't seen her character evolve in any way in a long time, and it's just repetitive. And after seeing this segment, I just felt like she hadn't even been gone. But at any rate, she comes out, and she told the crowd to admit they missed her just a little bit. She did do the Welcome to Raw line and got the big reaction for that, of course. And she hyped the 25th anniversary edition of Raw for January. And she said that Angle had been doing a hell of a job. She mentioned the Braun Strowman incidents and the Angle paternity situation with Jason Jordan. She brought up Angle's return to the ring. That's really, you still got a chant from the crowd. She said, however, when it came to SmackDown invading Raw, it takes 20 years to build a reputation and only 20 seconds to lose it. And she said that, Angle tried to explain himself, but she cut him off and said she didn't want to hear any excuses. She said, everyone thinks Shane is a great guy, but he's manipulative and conniving. And she said Shane lost his Hell in a Cell match and thinks that if he attacks her show, it will make him bigger and a winner. And she said that Angle is responsible for letting Shane make a mockery out of what her father built over 25 years ago. Angle once again tried to speak, but Stephanie cut him off and announced that he will be the team captain for Team Raw Survivor Series. I expect results. I expect victory. I expect total annihilation, she said. And she said that if she doesn't get what she wants, then Angle can expect her to find a new general manager. And she ended up dropping the mic and left the ring. And so, yeah, again, we're just back to, all right, it's Stephanie McMahon. It's more of the same. The character doesn't really change. They don't even tease change. It's just Stephanie coming out and doing her shtick. And she's very good at her delivery. There's no doubt about that. Stephanie plays this part well. It's just that the part's been overexposed. We've just seen this for too long, and I think people are getting a little bit tired of it. It's predictable. There's really nothing new and fun about this. And like I said, you know, she'd been gone all this time, and yet by the time that segment was over, it was like she never left. And I'm never a big fan of all of the wrestlers having to stand on the stage while somebody stands in the ring and addresses them. I mean, this one at least made a little more sense with Kurt wanting to issue some sort of a statement. But at the same time, do we need all the wrestlers out there? I mean, did they really need to be there for this? They couldn't have just stayed backstage, and you showed some of them watching on monitors in various places backstage while Kurt tried to address the situation. I think it makes this what should be this rebellious bunch of wrestlers just seem like they go with the flow. You know, they do as they're told, and I just don't think that's what fans want from these wrestlers. Not all of them have that stigma, but certainly many of them that are out there for these segments. And it's interesting when they leave certain people out of these segments because I think they realize it makes the talent just look weak. Cole did hype Seth Rollins against Kane for later in the show. Graves chimed in. It was Corey Graves, Michael Cole, and of course Booker T on commentary. Graves hyped Finn Balor against Cesaro, and Cole then chimed in again and hyped Bayley against Alicia Fox. The SmackDown ad during the commercial break hyped what we'd already known. It was Shinsuke Nakamura facing Kevin Owens, and then Bobby Roode against Dolph Ziggler in a best of three falls match. Both of those matches, I believe, are qualifiers for the Team SmackDown versus Raw match at Survivor Series. Then we went backstage where Angle tried to apologize to Stephanie again, but she cut him off. She said she meant every word of what she said, and if Angle doesn't believe her, he can ask Mick Foley. And then she left the building. Another car arrived, and it was The Miz, Curtis Axel, and the returning Bo Dallas, whose return received no fanfare whatsoever. They were too busy putting over everyone else's return, but poor Bo, who I think has been sidelined probably longer than anyone other than Stephanie. I'm trying to think of everyone who returned on this show. But yeah, he's been out a while, and I mean, he had Miz wishing him well with his illness and everything else, and once he returned, it was just like he was never gone. Then Miz boasted that he was fashionably late. Angle informed Miz that he, Kurt Angle, would be the captain of Team Raw. Miz complained that Angle was being rewarded for being a bad general manager. Angle told him to shut up, and he said Miz was nowhere to be found when SmackDown invaded, and he doesn't want anyone like that on Team Raw. And Angle informed Miz that he would find out who his opponent was in an Intercontinental title match once he was in the ring. So this was Angle punishing The Miz, and I found it to be a nice hook for the show. I think we've all looked at the Survivor Series lineup and seen champion versus champion matches, and two of them feature heel versus heel, both the secondary championships, IC and US championships, and then the women's championship matches. And I talked about it last week. I think it was, I said it would be the right thing to do would be to play into this. You know, there's fan assumptions that there's going to be a title change. And so go ahead and give people some title matches on TV. Fans are going to be more open to the possibility of a title change, even if it doesn't look like a potential title change on paper. You know, and so, I mean, it could be a quickie. I bought in for the main event, that's for sure. I hook, line, and sinker. I really thought we would see Mickie James win the championship on this show. We didn't. But more on that a little bit later. Bayley ended up making her entrance for a match with Alicia Fox. Alicia came out and talked about being too busy being captain to have the match, but she found a suitable replacement. Nia Jax made her entrance, and then we ended up with the broadcast team delivering some hype for Total Divas, which premieres on Wednesday night. And in the opening match of the night, it was Nia Jax defeating Bayley in 6 minutes and 45 seconds. She pretty much steamrolled her. I mean, Bayley got a little bit of offense in, but Jax was pretty dominant. Went over with, she kind of somersaulted into Bayley and then performed a leg drop and got the clean win. And Jax looked good. They didn't really address why she was away, but she is back. And I would assume she will be on the Raw team at Survivor Series. Then after the match, in fact, you know what? I forgot they actually made that official because Fox said that Jax was her first pick for Team Raw. And as Jax was heading up the ramp, though, Samoa Joe's music played, and then Joe walked past both Fox and Jax while heading to the ring. I'm like, what is he going to do to poor Bayley? Well, nothing. Cole said it was a night of returns, and it looked like Joe was ready for a fight, and they went to a commercial break. Well, at least we found out there is some advantage to Alicia Fox being the captain of the Raw Women's team. On, I think it was on the SmackDown side. They've already named the five entrants for the five Team SmackDown women for that match. but they had to have a five-way match to determine who the captain was for no good reason. Well, at least Fox gets to pick her team. And I mentioned last week, you know, I would never have guessed that she was going to win that match, but to become captain. But it, you know, I like it. I think in some ways it makes sense because, well, who really cares if Bayley and Sasha, or Sasha, I should say, ended up winning and becoming captain? Where Fox, at least, it feels like something different. I like Alicia Fox. I think that she still goes too far over the top in playing this character. I suspect that she's produced to do so. I just wish they would tone it down just a notch or two, and I think it would be a little more believable. I think there's a way that she can play this character where you don't just kind of sit there and roll your eyes at how far over the top she's going with it. Coming out of the break, we had Joe standing in the ring in his gear, and he said it seemed like some of the fans missed him based on the response, and he definitely got a big reaction, and Joe chants, and he said he finds it amusing because he hasn't missed any of the fans. Said none of them reached out to say they care, and therefore he doesn't care about them, and he said he would use their disrespect as fuel while beating the hell out of his opponent and pretending that person is one of the fans. So a nice promo by Joe in terms of trying to turn the crowd against him, and many in the crowd played along with this and by booing him. At the same time, you know, I'm watching this going, this is another guy that the fans adore. You know, how different would WWE be if they really did push, by and large, the people that fans want to see in the babyface role, the people that they are most vocal for, instead of kind of fighting and going against the grain? And for that matter, of course, yes, here's your weekly Roman Reigns. It should be a heel. But, you know, I mean, and for that matter, people that fans want to see as heels. Now, Reigns is doing his thing with the Shield, so I guess this isn't really the time for that, obviously. But no, I mean, I can't help but wonder, you know, why fight it all the time? Maybe just, and do what you claim you do by listening to your fans and react accordingly instead of always trying to prove you know better. His opponent for the match was Apollo Crews, and I like that they gave some explanation as to why it was Crews. They said he volunteered for the match. I don't know if he knew. I don't know if the idea was he knew he was facing Joe or just he wanted a match. But he wants to be on Team Raw at Survivor Series, because he and Titus O'Neil were among the first people attacked by SmackDown the week before. A little thing, but, you know, just was a nice explanation as to why this match was happening. It was Joe defeating Crews in 3:35 with the Coquina Clutch. After the match, Titus enters the ring and removes his jacket, and Joe acted like he was going to leave the ring. But then Titus ended up turning around, and Joe put him in the Coquina Clutch and left him lying. And we went back to the crowd chanting for Joe. And the broadcast team really didn't do any favors here when it came to making Joe look heelish, because they almost praise when the heel outsmarts the babyface. It's a strange thing. Then we had Cole hyping the Raw 25 Years episode, which is going to take place on January 22nd, and he noted that wrestlers from Raw and SmackDown will appear. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why would you tell us this now? You know, I don't think they're, number one, I don't think they're going to have any problem selling out Barclays Center. And it's already in their print advertising for this, if you will. I think that's enough. I don't think you need to tell everybody that wrestlers from Raw and SmackDown are going to be there. Their comeback might be, well, yeah, this is the great time to tell them because they're feuding with one another. And to me, it's just like, yeah, but by then, it's probably going to be forgotten by one thing, or for one thing. But also, I don't like it. You know, they make it seem like this event is so big that both brands are going to be there. Well, why would SmackDown want to show up and celebrate 25 years of Raw if they're so bitter with Raw? So that, it just kind of made me scratch my head going, this didn't need to be said on this show. They had plenty of things to hype, including that Kevin Nash and Shawn Michaels will appear. And even though, I mean, here's proof that they will go against what they've advertised in press releases and things of that nature. They've already advertised Undertaker, and Michael Cole said it's rumored that Undertaker will appear. And he hyped tickets going on sale for both of the venues that the big Raw 25 special is going to take place in. It's a show to look forward to. I think it's cool that they are going to have some Hall of Famers returning to the show, and Nash and Michaels, and we'll see who else. It's going to be interesting, though, when they play to the crowd. I believe it's Barclays Center, isn't it? I'm almost positive. But when they play to that, you know, when they're in that venue, and then they go to the other venue, and that, I believe the plan is where that's where you're going to see a lot of the legends appear, is at the second venue, Manhattan Center. And what's that crowd at the in Brooklyn going to be like? They're going to want to see those people themselves, not just on the big screen. So that part of it is going to be a little interesting, but we'll see how they do it. Graves hyped The Miz defending the IC title against an opponent of Angle's choosing, and they went to a break. And then coming out of the break, we got that match. It was The Miz with Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas in his corner, defeating Matt Hardy in 13 minutes to retain the Intercontinental title. I like this match. I thought they did a nice job, and it played into what I talked about earlier. I don't know if, had this match just taken place prior to the announcement of the champion versus champion matches at the pay-per-view, I think people just would have assumed, well, Miz is going to win. Matt's just kind of doing singles matches because his brother is sidelined. But I do think fans look at that and think, they're probably not going to have, even if they don't use the heel lingo, they're not going to have two bad guys go against one another. And they buy in a little more to the possibility of Matt Hardy having a brief title reign, facing Baron Corbin at the pay-per-view rather than Miz facing Corbin. And I think the crowd's reaction to this was fairly telling in that regard. But Miz ended up winning, skull-crushing finale after Hardy had a lot of near falls, and but it was entertaining. I thought it was nicely done, and I like that Miz was able to win the match without it being a bunch of interference from Axel and Dallas. I think Miz needs more credibility-building victories like this one, where he can beat someone clean. It doesn't have to be every opponent. You can certainly rely on Axel and Dallas at key times, but I think they get a little lazy with that, and I think Miz suffers a little bit. As I've said, when you see Miz facing a top wrestler, like we've seen him face Roman Reigns, it's just you kind of assume, all right, Reigns is going to win unless Miz cheats somehow, and you still probably assume that Reigns is going to win. And that's an extreme example because Reigns is, one of the top guys, if not the top guy. But there are other people that are high in the pecking order that it should feel like more of a showdown for Miz when he faces them, that you think that, this is going to be a tough match for the babyface, and this is going to be a tough challenge. We'll see if, can if you're just suspending your disbelief, if you want to feel like the babyface is has a real obstacle, and it's not just the people at ringside, it's that the heel can hold his own. That's where, in my mind, where the money is when you think the babyface, there's a chance this babyface might lose clean, that the opponent is that strong. And we don't get that often enough from Miz, so I like that. And I thought this was good use of Hardy, and I thought the wrestlers did a really nice job with the match. They recapped the opening segment with Stephanie McMahon snatching Kurt Angle's balls. And then we had Alexa Bliss telling Angle that she could help him. She suggested they cut dead weight like Mickie James and bring someone in from the Mae Young Classic to replace her. A little too, I don't know. Was this someone having fun because they made a couple of roster cuts, or am I reading too much into things? I don't think I am. Angle ended up booking Bliss against James for the Raw Women's Championship as the main event of the show. So, I mean, I get it. Bliss is trying to get her rival fired, basically. I think there was another way of doing this. I would have felt a little more sensitive. Then we had Graves hyping some previously advertised matches, and we got a video teaser for Asuka that she would be in action coming out of the commercial break. And in that fourth match, Asuka did what she really should have done on last week's Raw. She defeated Stacey Cohen in 1 minute and 40 seconds. If you don't know who Stacey Cohen is, that's okay. She was an enhancement wrestler, and this was all Asuka. She dominated with strikes. She eventually won with the Asuka Lock, and she looked dominant. She looked impressive. It was a memorable performance, even though it was against an enhancement wrestler. And, I mean, I'm still okay with what they did at TLC with Asuka and Emma. I can listen to arguments. Like Jake Barnett, for instance, and I talked about it. He felt strongly that they gave Emma too much in that match, and I was a little more understanding of it in that case. Last Monday's Raw, even though the match was shorter, that one I'm just like, why did you do this again? Why are you giving Emma so much offense? And it especially makes no sense now that a week later, Emma's no longer on the roster. Like, what were you doing? This is, so pay-per-view is one thing. Raw, I thought she should have had a more, just dynamic win. Just my take on it. It's not that, had they had the same match at the pay-per-view they had on Raw, I would have disliked it too. I enjoyed the pay-per-view match. Raw, I really didn't. We'd seen it. Just felt like it was time for Asuka to buzzsaw through Emma and deliver a strong showing in front of the bigger viewing audience. They didn't do it, but hopefully this is a sign that They get it. They need to showcase her just being dominant. And with such a small women's division, you can't really do that with, you don't want to start sacrificing even your undercard wrestlers to put over so quickly. So why not bring in some enhancement talent? It worked very well for Braun Strowman. Hell, James Ellsworth got a gig out of it, which makes me very happy. He remains a guilty pleasure. Backstage, Angle was texting. This guy spends more time on his phone than any teenage girl out there, at least when he's on Raw. All of a sudden, his eyes get big and he freaks out and he starts yelling, "Alert! They're here! They're here!" And then the camera pulls back and they show a very mellow-looking Daniel Bryan standing there. Like, that's what Angle's flipping out about, is Daniel Bryan? Angle asked Bryan what the hell he was doing, and they went to a commercial break. I like this as a hook as far as coming back from the break. It leaves you kind of wondering. And it's a nice teaser going to the break. And yeah, you can make the argument that, well, why would they cut it off there? And what happened during those 3 minutes the show was away? I get that. But I do think it's a nice little hook for viewers. Like, all right, we're going to have to wait. And I was okay with this. Backstage, though, when they did come back from the break, Angle questioned if Brian was there to finish the job that Shane started. And Brian told him, "No, stupid. I'm not allowed to rest." Oh, wait, he didn't say that. He assured Angle that he was not. He said he took a risk by showing up. And at Raw, when people would like to tear him apart, he said he took a risk because Shane didn't even know he was there. And Angle said the Raw roster would chew him alive, so he was going to keep him in the office. And Angle told Bryan to deliver the message that he's been bringing his that he's going to be bringing his gold medals and the Raw roster, and they are going to take out SmackDown. And Angle capped it off needlessly with his catchphrase. "It's true. It's something." Oh God, really? I don't know. Just really, did you need the catchphrase part there? They couldn't have left that off the script. Then we had the broadcast team setting up a video package on Brock Lesnar and Jinder Mahal, and Cole hyped that match as being, I think, less than 3 weeks away from Survivor Series. And then they went backstage again, where Brian was on the phone telling someone that it didn't go well. The lights went out in the office, and Daniel Bryan ended his call. And he sat alone in the dark with only his cell phone light as they cut to a break. Never mind the fact that the cameraman was still in there, which is always awkward. Anyhow, more on that in a second. They come out of the break, and Brian is on the phone telling somebody that he thought he could reason with Kurt Angle. He said the lights are out and the door is locked, and he asked the person if he could call back. "Something is wrong," he said. And then we saw Kane grab Daniel Bryan by the throat, and they cut away. And we later found out, at least according to Michael Cole, that Kane chokeslammed Daniel Bryan. This was really hokey. Why can't they just tell us that, when it comes to these general manager offices that don't look like offices, they just look like sets for an interview, why can't they just say that, yeah, they have a camera position there at all times? I know there are people out there that are just conditioned to watching wrestling that way. It doesn't bother them. They're used to it. Maybe they grew up with it. I go back far enough that, no, I want there to be an explanation. I watch enough television shows where there's always an explanation for why a camera would be in a certain situation like this. I mean, it's a different genre than most television shows. But still, I just think it's really lazy that they can't just take the time to explain why the camera is present when it would be so easy to do. And even if they don't want to say there's always a camera in those rooms, well, come up with some explanation. Maybe Daniel Bryan starts talking to the cameraman. Is it a shame that the cameraman is in there? It does take me out of the moment. And it's so even if you are somebody who it doesn't bother you a bit, I think there are a lot of fans out there it does annoy. And I also think that it's a turnoff for potential new customers for WWE that see this and go, "This is silly. This doesn't make any sense." Now, if that's not silly enough, we'll get to the Halloween match a little bit later. Then we ended up with Booker T talking with the other broadcast team members, who were a little more understanding when it came to Daniel Bryan being there and feeling bad for him. And Booker said Bryan got what he deserved. In the fifth match, it was Finn Balor defeating Cesaro in 11:50. I think this was the, all right, the internet marks will love this match of the night, because it's two internet darlings, if you will, in Balor and Cesaro. Cesaro had Sheamus in his corner, And this was, I think, the make good for Ballard losing last week decisively to Kane. And this was an entertaining match. I didn't think I wasn't blown away by it by any means, but it was entertaining. I even came away feeling like, you know, they got to pull back on the number of times they're having Sheamus and Cesaro lose matches because they lose a lot of singles matches. And granted, so do Ambrose and Rollins. I think they're falling into this whole pattern of, oh, they're tag team wrestlers, so they can lose singles matches. There's other wrestlers on the roster who can lose some singles matches. And, you know, if this were just one time, no big deal. But and I'm not saying they should never lose a singles match, but it's becoming a little too frequent. Plus, we've seen them lose to Rollins and Ambrose a lot. Cesaro and Sheamus are a badass heel tag team. We should not see badass heels losing as frequently as they do. The other thing missing from this was there was, I don't even know if they really talked much about Kane beating Balor. So that's kind of odd. But they did have Kane's music play as Balor was leaving, and he came out and attacked Balor on the stage, ended up leaving him lying with a tombstone pile driver, and then trainers ran out and checked on Balor while Kane was headed to the ring. The Shield music hit. Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose came out, while Michael Cole reminded viewers that Roman Reigns was absent. He offered no details. I don't know why WWE just can't say he's ill. He has the viral infection, as they've said publicly, but they won't say it on the television show. As Wade Keller and I talked about on his podcast last week, is this because Vince thinks sickness is, you know, any type of illness is like imaginary, doesn't believe in illness or whatever, you know, whatever Vince's weird quirk is with that? I don't know. It seems bizarre to me that they don't just say, you know, the man's out and hopefully, you know, we wish him well. There's none of that. He's just, yeah, he's not there. They just leave you wondering where he is and why he's not there. And especially considering that the guy just missed TLC, and I don't even know if they offered a good explanation for his whereabouts then, did they? Maybe I'm forgetting something with that one. They hyped Rollins against Kane for after the break, though, and when they came back, we got that match, and we also had Sheamus and Cesaro sticking around at ringside, and Ambrose was in the corner of Rollins. It was Kane pinning Rollins in 5:15. He ended up, Ambrose tried to take on both Sheamus and Cesaro. They were getting the better of him, so Rollins dove over the top rope onto them. He went for a springboard move on Kane, who ended up catching him and chokeslamming him for the win. There were parts of this that were pretty clunky. It looked like there was some miscommunication, maybe, or just some, you know, maybe some poor execution. I don't know if this is, you know, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is just Kane's a little bit rusty. You know, he hasn't been in the ring for quite a while. But, like, there was a springboard move that Rollins went for that it didn't look like Kane reacted much to. And then they tried to make it seem like he was just swatting Rollins away. So maybe it's just a bad camera angle, but, or, you know, either way, good cover by the broadcast team, because I, you know, it was enough for me to go, oh, maybe I just didn't see it right. I don't know. But the other part of this, Rollins went for, I think his second suicide dive. And I think, I don't know if the idea was that Kane was supposed to, at that point, swat him into the barricade, but it just was awkward. I don't even know how to describe. Rollins ended up landing pretty awkwardly on that one, but he popped right up, fortunately. So, yeah, just certainly we've seen better from these two. Kind of an off night for them. After the match, Kane tried to pick up Rollins for another move, but Ambrose ended up hitting dirty deeds on Kane. Kane ended up sitting up. Sheamus and Cesaro attacked Ambrose. Kane gave Dean a tombstone pile driver. And then Rollins covered Ambrose to protect him, which I thought was a nice touch. You know, you're still trying to establish that there's a brotherhood with these guys. They've had plenty of differences, and so I thought that was cool. And then Kane ended up picking up Rollins and giving him a tombstone as well. All of these tombstones. I wonder if next week's Raw main event in England is going to be the team of Kane, Sheamus, and Cesaro facing Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose. I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's the direction they go in, but nothing announced on this show. They went backstage where Daniel Bryan was being strapped on a gurney while the producers, Devon Dudley and Jamie Noble, were watching. I love how they're just there. There's really no explanation. Like, you know, there's people at home going, why is Devon Dudley there? Why is Devon Dudley in a suit? What is Jamie Noble doing? Wasn't he with Seth Rollins? Just never, you know, just they're there. The broadcast team spoke about the angle. Graves said he thought Bryan was truly there for the greater good, and Booker T said the Raw wrestlers had to stand their ground. You know, they're in the kind of a tough spot with Booker kind of has to be that guy right now that's standing up for all things Raw because, well, keep in mind, Corey Graves is a SmackDown regular as far as color commentary goes, and even Michael Cole now has called the last couple weeks of SmackDown while Tom Phillips was on assignment. We'll see if Tom, they said he'd be away for a couple of weeks on assignment. I don't know if he's ill. They never commented beyond that, but we'll see if Phillips is back tomorrow or if he is still on assignment because it has been a couple of weeks now. We got a recap of Stephanie McMahon removing Kurt Angle's balls with a dull butter knife. Then we had Michael Cole hyping Bliss against James for the Raw Women's Championship as the show's main event. Backstage, The Miz was telling his cronies that it was time to celebrate because he successfully defended his title again. They entered the locker room. They noticed a smell. They all just happened to be standing around in that, weird WWE pose where, it's always, if it's three people, well, you've seen the show. You kind of know what they do when it comes to these camera views. Nobody ever has their back to, okay, and that's just television. But this was so cheesy because they're all standing there acting like something smells as they just happen to be standing around this bag. They look down. Miz notices this trash bag. Axel starts to go through it. I'm like, what in God's name? And Miz said Braun Strowman was in the building. And Axel said Strowman was never coming back. And, they tried to play up that, he's left in the back of the dumpster and all of the, or the trash truck, that's what it was. And they ended up asking Miz if he was worried. Dallas ended up telling Miz that they have his back, unlike they weren't there at TLC, but they were now. And nothing would happen to him. And Miz's response, now I'm a little worried. So he's, I guess they thought it was clever that he would kind of spoof Dallas and Axel, which kind of begs the question of, well, then what are they really doing with Miz? Can he find better backup? And then we saw the production crew setting up pumpkins and skeletons and all these weird Halloween-themed gimmicks for a trick-or-treat fight with Heath Slater and Rhino against Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. God help us. They went to a commercial. When they came back, we had Miz finding Kane in the hallway and sucking up to him. And, Kane even was questioning the idea of, well, actually, no, it was Miz was trying to say that, Kane left him in the back of the garbage truck. And Kane pointed out that Miz, Cesaro, and Sheamus all helped him throw Strowman in the back of the truck. And Miz questioned if Strowman is back. Kane said he doesn't know, but if he is, he knows where to find him. And Miz said he knew they were on the same team. And that's when Kane said, "You're on your own," and laughed at Miz. And this is where I wrote, and I'll say again, Braun knows what you did last summer. Then we ended up with the seventh match of the night after, I guess, a little bit of hype, or I'm sorry, still shots from TLC of what they did to poor Braun Strowman. They just said he was in the back of the truck. So anyone who didn't see TLC, I don't know if they showed it in the still shots or not, but they didn't talk about how they, flipped the switch and compacted him and squashed him. Maybe they've come to their senses and realized how corny that is, that, well, you smushed the man. Not even Braun Strowman can avoid being smushed in the back of a trash compactor. But they just kept talking about how he's in the back of the truck. So there had to be somebody watching going, what, just because of the garbage? He's in trouble because of that. He's missing because of that? What's going on here? Seventh match of the show was Heath Slater and Rhino beating Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson in a trick-or-treat fight in 505. You had Slater dressed as Santa Claus, Rhino, Mrs. Claus, complete with makeup and women's attire. Then you had Gallows playing Tex Ferguson, his character from Southpaw Regional Wrestling. His partner, Karl Anderson, used his Southpaw persona of Chad Too Bad. They had kendo sticks taped up like candy corn. You've seen it all before. Slater and Rhino won in 505, as I mentioned. This was, you had Rhino ended up slamming. It was Anderson through a table and pinning him while Gallows was struggling because he had a pumpkin on his head and couldn't break it up. This was just awful. Crowd just kind of sat there. Broadcast team acted like they were embarrassed by it. I'm sure Vince McMahon was backstage laughing his ass off, thinking this was the greatest thing ever. Then we had a shot of Elias walking backstage, and they went to a break. We had Miz backstage after that break telling Sheamus and Cesaro. This was kind of a rinse and repeat because they also told him that he was on his own. And once they ended up leaving, Miz called Axel and told him to pack their bags because they were leaving. Then we had Elias singing a song. He said the only guy in worse shape than Jordan after last week is Joe Flacco. He was the Baltimore Ravens quarterback who took a wicked hit on Thursday Night Football and was knocked out of the game. Elias played the Ballad of Jason Jordan, and it was like a weird music video because we actually had highlights from last week's angle with Elias just destroying Jordan with that guitar shot last week, or his arm at least. Well, Jason Jordan made his return from, he wasn't even gone. Takes that guitar shot to the arm, you see the welts, he's fine. He comes out, charges the ring. He ended up destroying Elias's guitar, and I'm like, well, he did that last week, so I don't know how attached he is to this new guitar. Maybe I missed something, but if I did, I mean, why not have Elias talk about, you know, he destroyed his one guitar, but this is his special one. I don't think I missed that. I was kind of trying to catch up a little bit, and there's a chance I, you know, inadvertently sped through a line or something in Elias's promo at the beginning. But so if I did, I apologize. But it just seems like, you know, give some meaning to this because it's like destroying Honky Tonk Man's guitar. You know, it's like he's gonna if you don't destroy it, he was gonna. So what's the difference? Then we had Miz, Axel, and Dallas walking through a hall. Angle stopped them. Told Miz that he arrived late, and now he's trying to leave early. He said they better stay until the end of the show, or else. Then we had Graves hype the championship match for the main event. We had an ad for NXT, Sanity, Authors of Pain, NXT tag titles on Wednesday night. Then it was, you knew it was coming. They did not hype this in advance. It was the Cruiserweight segment of the evening, and it was kept very short. Enzo Amore came out. He had his voice back, but he had Drew Gulak waiting for him in the ring, and Drew Gulak brought up the three eyes and said the fourth is for incompetence. And he said there's only one word to describe Kalisto, S-O-F-T, soft. The crowd booed, and Enzo was talking to him off mic. Kalisto made his entrance to a pretty flat reaction. It was Kalisto beating Drew Gulak in 55 seconds with Salida del Sol. But immediately after the match, Enzo kicked Kalisto and then hit the Jordanzo, I think he calls it, which is Gail Kim's eat defeat. So he had Enzo standing tall. Short and sweet when it comes to the Cruiserweight segment this week. Then a little more hype for the main event. They went to a commercial. When they came back, we found out that we're getting a Fright Night Fatal 4-Way for Cruiserweight Supremacy on 205 Live. It's Mustafa Ali, Grand Metalik, Tony Nese, and Arya Daivari in a match, apparently, that means nothing. Cruiserweight Supremacy on the most exciting hour of television. Backstage, Miz told his cronies that they were leaving the moment the show ended. And so it's like, they're just kind of beating you over the head with it. You know, stay tuned. Braun's going to destroy some people. In the ninth match, it was Alexa Bliss defeating Mickey James in 12:15 to retain the Raw Women's Championship. Crowd was seemed like they were more into Alexa at times than they did Mickey James. You know, like, Mickey got a decent reaction when she came out. I really thought we might see that title change here. I'd been talking about it recently and predicted in my review that, yeah, you know, I didn't necessarily think Matt Hardy was going to. Wasn't completely opposed to it if he had beaten Miz, if they wanted to kind of set up that traditional babyface versus heel approach. But in this case, I thought, you know, going even before this match was announced for this show, I thought there was a good chance Mickey was going to end up winning her seventh championship and having a quickie title run just long enough to face Natalya. Maybe Natalya will lose. Hell, maybe Alexa Bliss and Natalya will meet one another at the pay-per-view after all. I'm not quite sure. But in this case, it was Alexa. James on a roll. She's getting all these near falls, quick, rapid-fire near falls, and then Bliss just hits her with a knockout punch and pins her. When did Alexa Bliss get knockout power? But I guess her character now has it. So it was kind of a weird ending to the match. I didn't really see that coming. And we've seen better from these two. I thought their pay-per-view match was better than this. But then Miz, Dallas, and Axel were trying to get out of the backstage area. They cut back to the ring. They're kind of going back and forth between what was going on backstage and Alexa's post-match celebration. And they ended up having the driver load up their bags and then open the door for them. And then there just magically happened to be a camera inside the car. Again, another, you know, it just, can't there be a reason? Can't, maybe Miz is having a documentary done on his life, and they're just, so cameraman's following them, or I don't know. Or they're doing something for WWE Ride Along. That would make even more sense, because why would WWE have the live feed to the documentary camera? But it, we're in this case, it's like, well, at least it's, you know, just work with me here. Give me something. I know, not everyone cares. I do. The driver ended up hitting the brakes. And this was like straight out of Austin Powers, the original one, where you have the guy screaming because the steamroller is slowly making its way toward him, because they just sit there in this car while this garbage truck slowly backs up. I'm like, well, why didn't the driver drive away? And maybe the idea was that the driver got out and I missed it. That's certainly possible. Miz and company could not get the door unlocked. I'm like, well, just reach over the seat into the driver's seat and unlock your door. But that didn't work either. They just sat there, freaking out. They couldn't get out. And I'm like, are they going to go all the way with this and, you know, have the garbage truck try to back over this car? No, no. The garbage truck just ended up dumping out its what it contained, I guess, which is a bunch of trash. And you don't see Braun Strowman in the back of the truck. I was waiting for, like, the compactor part to open, and there's Braun Strowman. Well, this was equally cheesy, because you see all this trash on the ground, and then you see Braun Strowman raise his arms triumphantly. It was so corny. The crowd did get into the idea. They, you know, he let out the primal scream, and you could hear the crowd cheering for this. I'm like, oh, my God. Strowman then chased the heels. They ended up going to the ring where Bliss was still celebrating, and Cole said, we may never see Miz and Miztourage again. Well, that was apparently their cue, because they were right onto the stage. Strowman followed them out, walked toward Miz. Dallas and Axel were able to keep Strowman off for a bit. He ended up getting his hands on Miz at some point. He didn't get to destroy him, you know, and I like that. Miz was able to kind of crawl away, but Strowman ended up getting the better of Axel. As I mentioned earlier, I think he gave him 6-7 power slams, including one through the broadcast table. So Miz and Bo Dallas, even though they were both like tossed down the entrance ramp, as was Axel, and it was just all-out Strowman domination, you didn't see Miz take that, you know, the big power move that, you know, you didn't get the big Miz payoff yet. They sat on that for a little bit. It corny, yes, with the way he returned, but the more important thing to me was, all right, how's this crowd taking to Strowman, who's now facing heels, clearly? So is he a long-term babyface? Are they just testing the water? I mean, I've viewed Strowman as a babyface for quite a while because he was working with Roman Reigns, who felt heelish anyway. But no, it looks like, you know, he's a babyface now. He's working with the Miztourage. He's working with, and obviously he's got a hit list. He's got Sheamus, Cesaro. So you got Sheamus, Cesaro, and Kane, obviously. And so, yeah, he's working to get his revenge on these heels. And he's letting out more war cries than usual, and the crowd is very receptive to those. And so that was, you know, as cheesy as elements of this were, the important thing is that the live crowd was very responsive to Braun Strowman now that he is a babyface. Because it was always odd to me. I've mentioned this in the past, when he was still technically a heel, there were some crowds that would cheer him anyway. And then there were other crowds that would still boo him. Every time it's like, man, they're not going to have any choice. They're going to have to turn this guy. That'd be a night where the live crowd would kind of, you know, kind of more boos than cheers for Braun Strowman. Like, what the heck? This guy's like, you know, tipped over ambulances and done all these cool things. And some crowds treated him like he was, you know, you get the mega pop, and then the next city, they could take or leave him. It was weird. But I think they have him slotted the right way. I think he, you know, it's, I can understand fans wanting, you know, if you are somebody, because I typically, like, even when Steve Austin turned babyface, and it was just inevitable, I remember feeling like, God, I wish he could stay heel for a bit longer, because I was just enjoying his heel run so much, but I knew it was the right thing for business. Where in this case, you know, I just feel like Strowman should be the babyface anyway. And so if you're kind of like I was with Austin, it's like, man, I wish he could do this for a while longer. I sympathize, but I think they're making the right move with him. And, you know, it, quite frankly, he, you know, if they test the waters with this and it doesn't go well, I think it will. But if he gets through this whole stretch where he's, you know, getting his I know what you did last summer, style revenge on the heels. Well, there's nothing stopping him from going back to being a heel himself. So, but yeah, Raw was a night filled with all sorts of returns, and you know, the first 2 hours I held my interest. They weren't flawless by any means. The last hour of the show, pretty painful with you know, the Halloween match and just a lot of the cruiserweight match, even though they kept it brief. There just was a lot of bad things going on in that third hour. But at least they tried to give you a hook to stick around to see Braun Strowman in the ladies' match. The women's match just wasn't what I was hoping for. Not the result necessarily, but just, I don't know, I just never bought in. Even though I was like predicting a Mickie James championship win, I should say. When, you know, watching those near falls down the stretch, none of them were like, oh man, it's going to happen here. They never really worked viewers into that. That area where you start to feel like, oh, this is going to be the final pin right here. It just never really reached that point. And so it was a little bit, again, kind of a disappointing match. We've seen better from them. Just never really made me believe, even though, like I say, even though I predicted it, once the bell rang, they never really made me believe, oh, here it is. You know, there wasn't that moment. Yeah, so Raw was a real mixed bag with some definite entertaining moments, but also some very campy moments, and the actually intentional campiness of the Halloween match. You know, Vince McMahon's going to love it. I'm sure some of you guys out there get a kick out of it, just not for me. But, you know, the way they were, you know, the cameras in places, why is the camera? That stuff just, it always irritates me. Yeah, I think that'll do it for now, everybody. If you haven't done so already, you can check out the 2 for 20 show that Jake Barnett and I did on Monday afternoon discussing the WWE talent cuts and a little bit more. And then coming up on Tuesday night, you can join me for live coverage of SmackDown, because Jake Barnett will be taking his daughter out trick-or-treating, and so I will be holding down the fort doing live coverage of WWE SmackDown. Jake will, we're just swapping roles this week. He's going to take my SmackDown hit list, so you'll still get Jake's perspective on the show coming up on Wednesday, and the .NET members will hear my audio review of SmackDown coming up on Tuesday night. And then also, the members will hear my Q&A audio show coming up on Tuesday afternoon sometime as well. So it should be a loaded day for .NET audio on the member side of things. If you enjoy these full-length audio reviews of WWE Raw, know that the .NET members hear them each and every Monday night following WWE Raw. Okay, there's an occasional exception, and it's sometimes on Tuesday, but every week they hear these full-length audio reviews, and not just for Raw, but also for SmackDown. NXT's television review is available in audio form for the members as well. So is the Ring of Honor television review, Lucha Underground when it's in season, Impact Wrestling, 205 Live, and all the major pay-per-views covered in audio form. If you are interested in membership to the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, just visit our main page. Once you're there, you'll see the sign-up area. Click into there, and you will find 3 different pricing options available. Pick the one that works best for you. We would love to have you find out what the fuss is all about when it comes to .NET membership. If you have any questions about this, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter, at ProWrestlingNet. Please remember to give us a rating on iTunes, wherever it is you can leave such a rating. You're helping us spread the word about this podcast, and it is greatly appreciated. A simple retweet on Twitter is also great. Anything you can do, any little gesture you can make to help spread the word about this daily podcast at pwaudio.net is greatly appreciated. Until next time, everybody, thank you again for listening. Take care.